Sovereign Notes. Before we get started today, I wanted to make a quick mention about the one-on-one healing sessions that are being offered by members of the Decentralized Consciousness Community. There are currently 7 of us that are offering these amazing sessions. I've done multiple with each member and have found that in each case, they have met me with their specific unique talents exactly where I needed it, what and with what I needed help with. If this at all resonates with you, sparks your curiosity, check out bitcoin-consciousness.com/sessions and reach out to one of us. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. So welcome to the Bitcoin Consciousness Podcast. You're listening to the Conscious Parenting Series. And this week, my guest is Sarah Quartrup. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks.
I think I'll maybe start the audience off with kind of just giving a brief introduction to how we met. And it was through our, to use a kind of a Bitcoiner term, it was through our fiat work. Through my business and through your work at a Montessori school. And you know, I was calling up schools to have them test out a product, and you and I just started talking immediately about Montessori, and we started talking a lot about really kind of the fundamental underpinnings of how children learn, and kind of like how we don't give them enough credit as individuals and human beings. And from then on, we've kind of kept in touch every month or so. And it seems like, as we were joking before we started recording, it seems like that every single time we get on the phone with each other, we talk for multiple hours at a time. Right. So I'm super happy now to be recording our conversation with, you know, so that we can share it with other people and, you know, share some of our insights and some of these, and your experiences as well. Cause, learning from your experience as a child who did Montessori for a short time and also a Montessori certified teacher as well. I mean, that's really cool. So I think maybe to start off, let's talk about your childhood and Montessori, your parents, wherever you want to go.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Let's start there. And, I was thinking about our phone call too the other day, because that is how, you know, you and I started to grow this shared interest. And, I asked you, you had been offering your product, your Montessori product. And I thought, I told you our answer was we don't need it at this time. It was summertime. And so I said, what brought you to Montessori? Why are you intrigued? Why are you interested? And that's how this conversation got started. I shared my experience with it, which was that I went to a Montessori school when I was a little girl, and I don't have vivid memories of it. I think I was about 18 months old until 5-ish. And then went to public school in elementary school in Texas, and then also middle school. When I got to 9th and 10th grade high school grades in Texas still, I had found a boarding school in Tennessee through a summer camp friend of mine that was a lot smaller. And I begged and pleaded and sometimes fought my parents to please send me there instead of going to this public school in Texas, because I don't know if I really fully put my finger on it at the time, but it was too large of a school, and I did not feel I needed to do much work in the class. I was bored. I could have copied anybody's information to my left or right, and the rest of the time been social if I wanted. And and I thought that was, you know, I was rolling my eyes. What was the point? Why was I there? I was insignificant, it felt. And then I did convince my parents, and I was lucky enough to be able to go to this other type of school, which was a lot smaller. I felt immediately on the first day of school, I overshot the landing and had put myself in this very small school where all the students were very smart and I wasn't going to fit in. But it was the best thing I ever did for myself. It challenged me, but I was capable of it. And I do look back at that time and attribute Montessori to that decision and to that kind of standing up for myself, even though it was subconscious at the time. And I returned back to Montessori when I was 25. I think I was right at 25 when I was hired at a Montessori school in Texas. I had had childcare experiences before. I'd been a summer camp counselor. I worked on Carnival Cruise Lines. I had babysat, worked at like the YMCA, real generic, traditional type childcare. So I wasn't certified yet, but I was in a toddler classroom, which is 18 months to three and a half years of age. And the lead teacher was certified. And so I followed her guide and I watched over the year and reached out to colleagues that were more experienced than me to get some help about, you know, what was this philosophy and method and approach. And I'm still learning. That was 18 years ago. And so I'm still learning today how to adapt the philosophy as needed. And it's all based on each individual's needs. So that's what's cool about it. It recognizes diversity. It values diversity, appreciates individuality. And so in that year in the toddler classroom, I started to watch these children and they're learning these basics with their fingers, like fine motor skill development, et cetera. And a light bulb went off in my head that I was still doing a lot of the techniques that these children were learning and that we were helping them with. And I thought, oh my goodness, Montessori, the philosophy's never left me ever, mm-hmm. my whole life. That's incredible. And so mm-hmm. then I became certified and it's a 2-year certification process and I learned more about it. And I have to say, Maria Montessori, well done. Like she really tapped into a good foundation. And especially if applied at any age is beneficial, but especially if applied between ages from birth to age 6 or 7, mm-hmm. that's a very foundational part of the human development. And I have to say, being exposed to it and returning back to it and understanding what it did do for me, it was a huge blessing. So I feel very fortunate. In addition, I had very supportive and loving family. So I had the combo of both. But mm-hmm. I've been thinking about, you know, what parts of Montessori have I retained still mm-hmm. today? Mm-hmm. Some of the basic ones have been, you know, I'm independent, always been confident about my independence, figuring things out for myself. I do attribute some of that just to me, just to my personality, but also mm-hmm. to the philosophy. And my hand-eye coordination is impeccable. My awareness of my body is very conscious. I feel that is due to Montessori. And also the biggest piece has been the sensorial learning part of it. Mm-hmm. It's a hands-on approach. So mm-hmm. I was learning math through my senses, through multiple senses, my touch, mm-hmm. the weight of things. I was learning all of my lessons in that way. And I was learning a holistic approach. I was learning about how to deal with challenging social situations if mm-hmm. those arose. You know, usually social comes in that second plane of development. So after age 6, they start to have friends and realize it's not just them, there's other people around mm-hmm. children. And yeah. I think that one of the biggest benefits that has come through the sensorial part is that when I was recognizing these toddlers in the classroom and that they were similar to still what I did that, you know, this day, it wasn't a vivid memory that came to mind. It wasn't anything visual. It was tactile. I felt it in an emotional way, but also in my body. So there's a memory there, I think, that Maria Montessori really tapped into. Maybe she was the first female physician in Italy in the early 1900s when she had developed this philosophy. And so she fully understood the human development and the human body, and she was in cahoots. She was had many friends that were psychologists. They were discovering some new things at the time about fetal development kind of stuff. And so she had a lot of information going into the development of this philosophy. And I really think because of your podcast, you know, title, The Consciousness, and that we're becoming a little bit more present these days, or at least tapping into the idea of that. And I think the fact that I can't explain it to anybody how I feel Montessori in my body, but I do. And I understand the philosophy in a way that means something significant to me because of that. And so I think that the emotional part of it the sensorial aspect of it, where they learn through their senses, really is part of why it's such a great foundation between ages 0 to 6. And I thought that was a big takeaway. I think because we all have this inner voice, and then we interact with so many different people in our lives. And nowadays there's all these options, right, in any kind of area that you think about. And when you're presented with all of these things over time, it can become overwhelming. I've felt it myself. And so you kind of forget to hear that inner voice at times. And I think that's a normal thing. I think that's okay. But to be able to remember how to distinguish what your thoughts are, what your beliefs are, what your inner voice is telling you versus everything else coming at you in the world sensorially, is what I've appreciated myself the most from, I don't attribute just Montessori to it. I attribute a lot of Montessori to it. I think because of it, I'm able to tap back into which one is my voice and hearing me and feeling that, again, tying back into that confidence and independence.
Wow, that is so good. You said so many things that just really, really struck me. The biggest one being that you feel, you know, that the thing that you got the most from, you know, your short time in Montessori, even though you don't remember it, is your ability to feel. It wasn't about rational, logical processes, but instead it was being able to feel. And there's like so Montessori is very cool because for children that are very young, there's a big, big focus on fine motor skills and fine motor development. And that's really cool. It's a very practical way to sort of bring you into the present moment, bring you into your body, and really focus on how your body is moving and, you know, how to fine tune. So, you know, if you envision your body, your soul is really the thing that is guiding and driving your body around through this reality. And your body is just basically a robot. You imagine that when you came into this biological robot, that you didn't know how to use it at all. And it seems like it's very easy. I think you mentioned the word lost a little bit, like you get lost in all of the things, all of these stimulations, you know, that come that is around us in the world. But when, you know, you're taught in like a setting like Montessori to come into your body, to know it, to understand and feel how it works, it encourages so much presence that it unlocks. It's like a key that unlocks so many other things and abilities for you to flourish as a human being.
Yes, it's so. Maria Montessori truly, and I'm saying as I'm continuing to understand this in so many different ways, Maria Montessori was a genius in the way that she designed her philosophy. She ties a little bit of this and a little bit of that into each lesson, meaning if they were learning fine motor skill development, it may also include some language instruction to the child at the time. And this is through the training that you learn this, but that preps them unconsciously so, but as a side benefit for math or for color distinction or for order, sense of order. So it's fascinating how she in a simple way tied it all together in a circle and made it all blend and flow. And also part of her geniusness is the simplicity of it. Less is more kind of thing in Montessori. You present a lesson to a child a little bit more through showing them yourself and using only the necessary vocabulary. And not too many words. Like you and I's conversation, Caleb would not go over well with a child we were trying to teach.
Right.
But then allowing them essentially kind of, and then stepping back and allowing the child to experience it themselves, because you'll notice, I'm sure Caleb, you have a young child, and and I'm sure you've noticed that when you show him how to do something, he probably wants to run along and do it with you now. Mm-hmm. And when you tell a child with your words how to do something, that they're just going to watch your mouth. Mm-hmm. So they don't understand the words that we're using all the time. And so they're unnecessary to bog them down with. But yes, it's that when you do it in this fashion, when you present a lesson and role model with your movements and keep it at a good pace, keep it at a slow, easy pace for the child to observe, they feel it in their learning. They don't just hear your words, and literally they don't even hear your words anyway at that age. They're going to do what they want to do, but they want to try it themselves. And so then when they go to practice it, and if they need help here and there, you can step in and give them a little pointer and help them figure it out and problem solve. But basically they practice it on their own and learn through their mistakes. And they do. It's not just, you know, you have to be a little patient and see kind of if there's a little tweak here and there that you might have to adjust to make it work best for that child specifically. But they really feel out the lesson. And so in math, for example, when they're learning unit one, they're learning about number one versus 100 or versus 1,000. And this would be a little bit older, maybe a 6, 7, 8 year old, but they feel the materials that are used are quality materials. Maria Montessori designed glass beads on, and she would string 10 of them together to make a 10 bar and create 100 square. And so they would feel the difference in the weight. And so I think that all of that is so very important, because you're right. When we're born into our body, you know, when we come into this world, we come into this this human physical body, and it's not fully developed. We still need our parents' help to eat and you know, depending on the child, maybe sometimes even to breathe in the beginning. And so we're still developing a lot of the physical human body parts that keep us alive. But we are born, I think, with this inner soul, and it's guiding us through our emotions. When we cry, we're unhappy. We don't like that. When we're happy, we smile. We like that. Mm-hmm. And that's something we always have from the beginning. And so to remember that that is guiding us in life, and that the sensorial part of learning is, I just think that was the most genius part of her philosophy, was including that sensorial, tactural part of the learning.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a quote that in my high school there was above the shop door, and it was, I think it was, I hear, I listen, I read, I memorize, or something like that. And then the last phrase was, I do, I understand. And the big thing is, I do, you know, I'm physically interacting and manipulating and understanding, and I'm getting feedback, immediate feedback from the world around me. And consequence, it's sort of like, you know, I do A and B happens. I do A and C and, you know, B turns into something completely different. And yeah, and it's really amazing as, you know, as a child of a toddler to notice how, when I can be present with him and be patient with him and use a lot of these sort of tactics where, you know, I can kind of teach him through example. And you know, like if he's, like the other day, we were playing with some Legos and something had came apart and he needed some help putting it back together. And, you know, this might be slightly different from the way that it's done in Montessori, but I physically took his hands within my hands and I just helped.
No, that's wonderful.
Right. I just helped him move his hands and we put this thing together and it did a couple of things. So it sort of like increased the confidence for him because he was able to see, oh, you know, I can do this. I can put this together. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then also taught him how to ask for help as well. It taught him that it's okay to ask for help. You know, my dad is here to support me, to comfort me, and to help me through, you know, through these things. And so I think that what happened as we kind of grow up, you know, if we have this belief that everybody around you not everybody around you is here to judge you or to put you down, but instead you can be used for your support. It gives you so much more confidence in the world. Yeah. And in life, you know,
it does. When you encourage a child, you can do this. And it's not just a light statement in that message. It the thing is that we all know what's best for our well-being on our own. And I know that's kind of a hard concept for us to wrap around when it comes to little children, especially young, in the first few years of life, because they do still need our help, like mentioned before, that they need us to move. They can't walk around yet. They can't speak yet. They can't eat on their own yet. But when I've told a child at age 2, if they've come to me and said something like their friend wasn't listening to them, or they had some situation that made them sad, I would say, well, I trust you to do what's best for you. I've seen you walk around this classroom and manage yourself well. And I think that you'll know what to do if you think about it. If you still need my help, you can come to me. And that works often because I'm encouraging them. You got it. You know what to do.
Right.
And I'm here if you need me, but I don't think you need me to answer that for you. You have the answer already. And I love what you just shared about doing that with your son. I think in Montessori, of course, we want them to do it on their own. But in the beginning, they may need a little bit of encouragement with physically. So if it's the first time showing them, let me show you how. Let me show you how, and then you can do it. So then stepping back, so not overdoing the doing it for them so much. But it sounds like he took away the right things, and that he felt confident. He also knew how to ask for help. And often, yes, I think the encouragement is the biggest thing. Or let's figure this out together, and not giving them the answer. That's a great technique we use in the Montessori classroom too.
So first of all, what are the ages of children that you're certified to teach?
It's about 18 months, sometimes a little younger, depending if the child's ready, maybe 16 months. At least from the class, at least from the school, the schools I've worked in, that's how the age group was managed. It was 18 months to 3 years of age, and that's give or take a little on each end because it's based on the child's readiness. So it's early childhood is the certification that I received from AMS, American Montessori Society. I'm sorry. I just totally gave you the wrong information. So 18 months to 3 years of age is toddler. Yep. That was the toddler age group. What I'm certified for is ages 3 to 6. Now in my certification process, and that's the early childhood certification I mentioned. The early childhood certification, part of the learning includes the younger years and a little bit of the older past age 6 in case you have a student that you need to adjust to on on each end. So if we had a child that came into our classroom at age 2.5 because they were very smart or they were picking up things easily, but maybe their physical developments were a little bit more 2.5 appropriate, we would need to know the understanding of both, the range in there. So the official age range that I'm certified to teach is 3 to 6.
Okay, very cool. So first of all, what is it that you are teaching kids about emotions? Because it seems like even we as adults are having a really hard time understanding our emotions ourselves. Yeah. And, and their role in our lives. And we tend to either bury them or misappropriate them. We tend to take things out on others. And
yeah.
I'm really curious what the Montessori method and what you believe is important to teach children about emotions, especially in this younger age range.
Right. So I think the biggest benefit at this age, when we're talking about guiding this age, is your reaction to things, which is hard to be 100% with if you find one that you prefer. If a child came up to us with an emotional concern, or maybe, okay, so the age group that I work with, they're still very, it's only them. They're only focused on themselves. They don't, like I said, they don't really start to understand the concept of friends or socializing until after age 6, it seems. They might say, I have a best friend at age 3, but it might just because they've heard other people saying it. They don't really understand what it means. And so if they can't, so often you see, you know, children maybe hitting each other because they wanted the toy that their friend was already playing with, and why wasn't it being given to them or what have you. And we do lay out the basics of what's okay and what's not okay. So if there was a hitting situation, let's say, and the teacher addressed it, we would explain that's not okay, that's not nice. I'd like to try and help you with this. And then if the child explained, I wanted the toy, then we would validate their feeling first. We want them to understand that that's okay. Yeah, I would want that toy too. I understand it's a really fun toy. And then present an option of, okay, well, let's talk about how you can play with that toy at some point. Not right now because your friend is already using it, but let's work on a solution that's a little bit more, you know, I wouldn't say this, but it would be around respect and understanding other individuals. So validating their feelings is huge. It's okay to feel upset. I understand why you feel upset. I understand why you did X, Y, and Z. It's not okay because then it affected negatively X, Y, and Z in this situation. You hurt your friend or you threw a chair or whatever. And putting it back on them. So often at this age, they're a new evolution. Children, they're here and they're new. They're ready to do new things. And so, you know, like, we're not driving around in horses and buggies anymore, and we're not using dial-up phones anymore and all that kind of stuff. And so if you think of it in that way, these children, they're evolved. And so what I love is that it about the philosophy is that it allows for the adult to say, I don't know, what do you think? Why don't you tell me what your answer is going to be? Let's work through your emotion and your solution to it together. You can guide them here and there. But I love that it kind of opportunity to see this new life developing in front of your eyes instead of laying it out for them. Let me tell you, excuse me, let me tell you what I've learned in this life is a parenting technique. Let me tell you about my struggles and what to do and not to do based on my experiences. Instead of that, saying, I don't know, what do you think? And then, you know, if it's not a good solution, then you can guide it as accordingly. But so for the emotions, we don't get into the detailed parts of it too much because we don't want to overwhelm them or confuse them. But the minimal reaction to emotions, validating emotions, and letting them problem solve through their challenges, including their emotional challenges or sensorial based challenges, are huge. And I think less is more again in a sense. Yeah, in this case, I think just a minimal reaction is a good approach. What I mean by that is, if a child is doing some undesired behavior, it might be based on many different things, right? We can assume all kinds of things because they don't have a lot of words or communications to be able to express what's going on or really understanding of it. But any type of behaviors that are undesired, it's best to just kind of not even look at them, turn your back, and highlight some things that you do like to see in the classroom or that you're enjoying seeing that are more positive. And that's what I mean by less is more as a type of reaction. instead of drawing more attention to the negative behavior that you might be seeing in this age group.
Yeah, I really want to expand on that while we're on that topic.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, this plays perfectly because yesterday, and I've described this with, I don't remember who the guest was, but I had another episode where I was talking about how it seems like, well, as the parents, we'll get into this cycle with our son where we're like sort of taking power away from him and then he fights more, right? So it's like, you take power away, he fights more. We take more power away, he continues fighting more. And it's just like becomes this cycle where it's almost like you sort of disrespected his power so much that he will lash out in any way possible. And this was kind of happening to us last night where it was just like instead of saying he had gotten into this mood, it's we collectively got into this this kind of like almost like I'm envisioning it like, you know, you're circling a drain. You just get closer and closer to the drain with this negativity.
That's a good visualization.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was running around. We were outside and he was running around. He wanted to grab these rocks that were in like a little natural gas fire pit. And we're like, no, you can't. You have to leave those alone. And at a certain, you know, he's just doing all these behaviors one after another. That's like, and it just keeps irking us more and more and more. So I'm curious what, like, I really want you to expand more on that, on, you know, because when he's running around, you know, doing all these things and he's, for lack of a better term, kind of being a little terror, it's like, what, how am I supposed to handle this as a parent?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you're asking because it does put you in a cycle and it kind of makes you feel like you have no control as well as him. You both feel out of alignment and out of control of what's going on in the situation. So when you mentioned the more you take away from him, the harder he fights. Good for him. Because okay, so if you think about it, has anybody ever told you you can't do something that you are intentional about doing and thought, oh, really? Just watch this. Well, wait for it. You know, have you ever? You don't.
Yes, exactly.
Nobody likes to be told they can't do something that they feel passionate about or is a desire or that they believe or that they know they can do. Nobody likes to have that type of power taken away from them. So it's good that he is fighting for who he is because that means he's in touch with his feelings and he knows that that makes him upset to have someone say, you don't know who you are, I know better.
Yeah.
That's essentially, I think, might be what's going on for a child in this situation, even though it doesn't manifest itself in such a way. It seems more childish to see what's actually being manifested. Now, you said you were outside and he was wanting to pick up some rocks and that wasn't okay. So in a situation like that where they keep doing it intentionally so and you feel like they're doing it to really make you mad or whatever.
Yeah.
What we do in the classroom is we put it back on the child. So we'll say we might mention once, maybe twice, depending on whatever the management of the teachers has been decided on at the time, or parents or what have you. But we might say, you know, those rocks are too hot, or whatever the safety part of it was, and so we can't touch those. You might get hurt if they try it again, and then they get to that third time, let's say. And you really have to stick to your consistency here because they understand if you say, I'm going to tell you this once and then next time we're going inside or what have you, and you don't, and you keep saying that over and over again, I'm going to give you another chance. Okay, next time is the last time. They get there. They know they can continue getting away with it if you're not consistent.
Right.
So consistency is important. But also, one thing that we put back on the child is, okay, and then going over to get his hand, physically saying, you're not showing me that you're able to control your body at this time. Mm-hmm. And so we'll go inside and I'll help you control your body for a little bit until mm-hmm. you're ready to try it again. We'll try it again though. And they'll still be upset. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is saying that's the consequence. And it's not you giving them the consequence. It's because of them. If they continue to say, but I want to go outside. We'll try it again. I'm so excited that you love to be outside. Mm-hmm. When we're out there, we can't touch those rocks though. And so when you're ready to try that again, we can see if you do a better job of the circumstances outside or controlling your body outside and put it back on him. Then he doesn't associate being upset with you or testing you because it's his own consequence. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. No, I really love this approach. I think that really in an ideal world, we would have a conversation with the child and we would say, hey, I understand that you're probably not feeling respected right now. I understand that you're feeling powerless and that you're like, because again, I know that in these situations where we're circling the drain together, that the two of us together, we both feel like we're losing power and we're fighting for it more and more and more. And if I could explain that to him and sort of take a step back with him together, then I think that would be the ideal opportunity for us to, reconnect with ourselves, to regain our presence, to take back our breath and to gain our power back that we've been taking from each other. But, with a toddler, it's a little bit different because you need like some sort of practical steps because if you, like for instance, with the hot rocks, it's like, I cannot let you go and take those rocks if you never hurt yourself, and if he keeps going on these on like this power grab binge, he's going to run out into the street and just do all these things that it's just not physically safe for you. So I think this is an interesting way to basically be like, I'm sorry, I have to set a boundary here to keep you physically safe. Mm-hmm. And we'll try again later. I'm not permanently taking this power away from you. I'm just we're gonna remove ourselves from the situation, and because I want to keep you safe, and then we'll try it again. And and what I have found is in those times where that's a big thing is you just redirect. And then you say, yes, we can move back to this thing later. So that works really well for kids that, are my age, that are in their toddler years and super young. So now beyond that, I want to talk a little about, because I know that there are many parents in the audience that either have kids in their teenage years or maybe their kids have moved out. And so they've seen their kids, go through all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And so I want to go maybe through some examples of like, maybe let's as like a teenager who is acting out and sort of in this kind of power grab. It's kind of a similar thing. Like the ideal, I think the ideal would be to sit with them and explain, clearly something is off and we need to reconnect with ourselves. I think that is possible. But also when you're in that situation, you also sometimes want to be very stubborn and you want to fight against that. So I wonder, I'm just curious what you think about that.
Yeah. The adolescent years are fascinating to me myself. I'm not certified in the Montessori, but I do have experience working with that age group in the years of working in a Montessori school in Texas. they're basically large toddlers. And so the thing is, the thing again about Montessori, she started her philosophy with the younger age range, so 0 to 6. And then she delved into about 9 years later, she started to delve into her philosophy for 7 to 12 year olds. And then she delved in later, the adolescent years, and later through adulthood. So it was an ever growing thing. It was fascinating to see how fast it grew too. But what she was able to bring into the philosophy that most educational reforms we have now don't is what's going on in the body developmentally. And so when a child is born 0 to 6, their prefrontal lobe there is developing, the largest part of their brain. And then it shifts to more of that social and part. And then when they return back to adolescence, there's another part of their prefrontal cortex that's developing. I can't remember the specifics, but in general, they kind of go back to a part of that development. And so that's why they resemble large toddlers, because they kind of have these emotions, more words, more experiences, and it can be a confusing time. So for that age group, if they're in a Montessori school, but it doesn't have to just be if they're in a Montessori school, but they are figuring out the world a little bit more. They're asking bigger questions. They're figuring out who to trust and what to believe and all this kind of stuff. And so physical and practical and experiences are important for them at that age. So I know that a lot of the middle schools included in a Montessori school, middle school. So like, I think in sixth grade, they're around 11, 12, and then seventh, eighth grade is generally where the philosophy ends. If a Montessori school goes through high school, it's usually adapting in an IB type of program. But in the middle school programs I've seen, which are so cool, they will start to talk about what their business will be. So they'll talk about how they need, what kind of things they want for their classroom or maybe to do that year. How can we achieve this? We need to make money. How can we make money? And a lot of them start a business. And the businesses I've seen have been taking care of chickens and making profit off the eggs that they produce. Beekeeping, so selling the honey, and et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes they make crafts and they sell those. But the vastness of what goes into that. So they talk about, okay, so how do we take care of chickens? Well, we need a fence, we need a coop, and they build all of this. So it's a lot of them physically being involved with these bigger ideas. And that is part of the philosophy, because they need something physical at that age to use their body, and maybe, you know, like going to work at a barn or something, you know, something like that is good for that age. And so I know regardless, I think adolescent age is going to include a lot of those confusing times and those emotions. But I think those types of activities, those physical things and kind of bigger idea projects really help to manage it. And then also being honest with your children. So they're going to ask you these harder questions. And sometimes we like to, or we think, I don't want to tell you the real answer to that because it's a really bad answer. It's a really, you're not, it's not a fun answer. It's not a happy answer or something. But to give them the basics of the honesty in the answer, I think is important too, because they are testing to see who they can trust, and they appreciate someone that they know they can rely on.
Yeah. So totally. So you're, the two big things when it comes to, you know, sort of the young adult. And I think, again, I don't want to say this is exclusive, but just kind of summarizing your answer is honesty, you know, and again, treating them with the respect that they are a human being. They're sort of an equal, and I mean, they are an equal, and also having opportunities for them to create, so that they have, you know, that they have ways to express themselves, freely. And, Montessori does that, you know, through, you know, entrepreneurship type of projects, which I think is really cool. I think that we as human beings are basically designed to be very entrepreneurial. I think that the human spirit, the oneness of human spirit, is really designed to serve itself. And when we connect with one another more, and connect with ourselves more and follow our inner guidance and create from our inner selves and just do things out of interest, curiosity, passion, we create value for other people. And that's really what I think what is so cool about this philosophy is there at its core is it's really respecting, you know, the oneness of humanity and this idea of, you know, do what you want to do and explore love to learn, you know. That's one of the big things. It's just like it's not learning specific things. It's not memorizing specific facts or anything like this. No, it's actually learning how to learn. And you actually, you know, you kind of got into the biology of, you know, kids when they were in 0 to 6, and then they moved on from there. And I kind of draw this akin to when they're 0 to 6, they're in a very, very feeling sort of space. Like they're in theta kind of brainwaves. They're everything that they take in, they are latching onto those beliefs as real, and they're feeling them, and feeling all these different frequencies and vibrations. And then, you know, around 6, 7 years old, they kind of move into a more rational place. So it's like, it's almost like the body has been designed to first understand like its connection to source in the first years. And once it understands that connection to source, okay, now it's time to grow and go out into the world and know how to manipulate the world and build things and be creative and this kind of thing. So it's like, it's really those beginning years that I think because we're sort of confused as to like how to teach kids about this. We ourselves as parents, as teachers, as adults are confused as to how our emotions work, how intuition works, you know, how our connection to higher truth and higher selves work. You know, we miss that part. So we move into rationality, and it becomes about earning. It becomes solely about earning money or earning the good grade or getting the friends. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yes. And this is, yes. Okay. So intuition, that's what they are, that's their gift to us, to remind us that we all know how to best do what's best for us. The intuition that we all have, and as we're adults and we're becoming parents or teaching, we have already been through a lot of the process of muting that intuition a little bit through our experiences. And so it's quite normal for adults to forget that part of it. But the thing is that it, like I said, these children, they're evolved. And so that is the part that I love the most about like what we were talking about in the middle school with the projects. Yes, they get to bring something new to the table. And sometimes they bring something you would have never fathomed. And it's fascinating. That's the best part about it is, oh, you can learn along with them. You can get new ideas too. And it is a philosophy based on a love of learning, which I know is one of the things I've also taken away from my experience being in there at a young girl was, is that I love learning new things. When I find that I'm not having enough motivation or I feel uninspired, it's because I'm bored and I'm ready for something new, something new. Something new is a big thing to highlight in this part of it, because the children, they're something new and they're here to bring something new to the table in general. And yes, I see that education systems to now are more focused on those products, those numbers, that the manifestations of how many students did you have in your school district that went to college, how many graduated and went to college, how many, what's your percentage in this and that and this and that, and what that is to me is so it's fascinating, because we box these children in a room based on their age alone. Say, because you're 8 years old, you're going to be learning this year. And then when you're 9, you're going to be learning this. And that's the goal. It's not based ever on where we've evolved to or what that individual person is. So I know that when we all come into this world, even watching children develop into age 1, I see children taking on skills, interests, and that are different from one another. I'm sure when Caleb, when you have your second child, you're going to see differences between the two of them. And that is fascinating to me. So I know that for myself, language came easier for me and math did not. And when I went to public school in second grade, I remember feeling like I might not be so smart, like I might be behind, like I might be slow, like there was something maybe wrong with me, not on a high level. I just remember this for the first time in my experience being compared to others in the math class.
Yep. Comparison. And that's a big word. Yep.
Compared. Yes. And so so the educational systems that we have, we put these children in a room, make them sit all day, which is weird. Like, nobody wants to be sitting all day and have to maybe not go to the bathroom when they want to or what have you.
Right.
Yeah. Listening to a teacher speak and talk about things, not show them things, but talk about things or show them a video of things at times. Of what they should be learning. I zoned out all the time in that way. And we're preparing them, I'm using heavy quotes around this, we're preparing them for the world, to be prepared for the world by keeping them away from the world, by boxing them up in a classroom and telling them what they should know. Right. And I think that it's gotten so far from what education should be about. And it should be to spark a love of learning in the child and let them show us what their life is going to develop into with some guidance here and there. It's not, so it's funny because I've been asking people ever since I've grown into the adult part of my experience with Montessori, that do they know what a Montessori school is? And I've not found many who truly do know. It's rare, actually, for me to find people who truly do know what the philosophy is. Most people either have not heard of it or think it's a religious-based school. It's not, or that it's for children who have learning challenges. And nobody seems to understand that it is an individualistic approach to prepare children to confidently face the unknown. And that's what traditional education, we don't know what their future is going to be like. We're not going to be around for it either. So how can we accurately prepare a child to face the world, a world yet unknown, when we're approaching it in this sense? And I have to say, a lot of it's in one ear out the other, just to make the grade. It's rote memorization, and that is not effective, and it's not sustainable, and it doesn't capture the interest of any child either, or most children. Some people do quite well in that system, so I don't mean to be putting it down. I just don't think that it allows for a lot of people to feel like they are valued as themselves, and it can actually encourage quite the opposite, which is to feel like they're compared and against they're compared with their peers. And what we highlight some and not others, and why is that? Why do some people seem like they're the better students and some not so much? And I think it's not effective towards a real education and towards learning. I think it deters learning, actually. And
You said so many things that I wanted to comment on, so I'm going to try to like sum it up. So like I think the biggest thing that you had said that I really wanted to comment on was that the philosophy of Montessori is focusing on, you know, giving kids the ability to have the confidence to face the unknown. And after you said that, that really struck me, because I was like, okay, well, but so what is it about facing the unknown that is so bad, right? And it's such a common theme, but it's fear. Like, being scared of the unknown is really what seems like traps us every single day.
Yeah,
it traps us in jobs that we don't want to do. It traps us in habits that we don't want to keep up. It's a fear-based sort of a mode where it's like, I need to be secure. I cannot go out into this world and have the confidence to face something that I don't know and I don't understand. And I would feel more comfortable just doing something that I know and I'm confident in, and everybody says it's safe, type of thing. And it just crushes our spirits as human beings who come here to create and to live and to love learning, like you were saying. And you know, kind of like it's almost like the other system is set up to do quite the opposite. It's like, here is the known. Memorize this known. This is the known that you need to know, you know, so you don't have to be afraid. You can be, you know, you can be secure knowing these facts A, B, and C. Now that you know them, you can go out in the world. You're secure now. And so that for me was really, when you said that, was really kind of mind blowing. I was like, yeah, you're right. It's like this fear of the unknown that, you know, if we can just teach kids that not only is the unknown not something that we should fear, but it's something that we should be excited about approaching.
Let's
we should all
explore
be
it. Yeah.
Yeah. We should this all be should passionate be excited about exploring unknown things, you know?
Yeah. And together, you know, that's what's the coolest thing is they're little scientists, these children, and that they we should be. And let's go be scientists together. So we're not here, we as human beings, we're not here to regurgitate the same old thing. We're not here to reproduce what's already manifested. It's boring, and it's not promoting evolution at all. So in schools where we reward mediocrity, because I think it's based on what makes, in some situations, not all, but in some situations, it can be based on whatever makes the day easier for the teacher, whatever the school regulations are. And it's like so black and white. It's more an authoritative approach. It's more saying, I know best, again, I know best, and I'm going to tell you no matter what. And it's black and white, and it becomes kind of this authoritative approach. And that's taking away from the child's freedom and input and individuality. And so why would that work? Why would that work in any way unless the person is able to push through the sensitive part of the, you know, not being heard and you know, diligently kind of get done what needs to be done so that they can succeed. And sometimes that does work, but we're not here to reproduce history. And just because we experience something doesn't mean that anyone else will experience it in that way. So I know that I may have heard my parents tell me some things in my life over and over and over and over and over again. And then 1 year I experience something and I go, oh, what they were saying, right? And so it's until I experience it myself, and that's a big part of why I don't think traditional education is a really great system anymore. I can't wait for it to be to be gone with, because I think that when you experience something of interest to each individual person, it has to be something they're interested in at the time too, then they really learn, and then they really start to get these intuitive thoughts like, ooh, maybe I should try this because I just experienced that, or this. Right. And it's new. It's a new idea.
Right.
And that is the coolest thing about Montessori, is it allows for the evolution to continue.
Yeah. I've kind of gotten this like sense that what you're describing is treating kids with the same kind of reverence that we expect them to treat us just simply because we're older, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost, it's kind of like the kids are like, they're divided from the adults. They're treated as separate individuals, and there's not like this mutual sort of love and respect for them. I think that it's so much about, okay, you're a child, so you don't know, and I know better than you, and this kind of thing. And what you're describing is amazing, because it's really respecting the children as like, okay, you are the fresh perspective on this world, and we respect your fresh perspective, and we have wisdom to help guide you to, you know, some of the lessons and teachings that we have. However, we are relying on your fresh perspective to help us evolve and grow together. And I think
that's what makes learning fun when you approach it in that way.
Totally. I mean, that's like the true essence of innovation is just getting somebody who has never really identified with this problem, because that's what we do. It seems like, is we collectively, we do this individually, we identify with things in our lives and then those become our reality and then we can't change them. But then, mm-hmm. you know, these kids come into this world and they haven't been on the physical plane for very long and they're able to think through and be like, well, envision it like this. And it can sound mm-hmm. so crazy at times, you know, like you had mentioned going from a horse and buggy to a car that drives yeah. itself, you know, like imagine how crazy that would have sounded to those people back then. And, you know, it's actually similar. That's actually a great plug for Bitcoin too, because Bitcoin is treated very similarly, that people don't, you know, it is such a completely different concept than what we're used to, that people think they're just, that we're crazy when we say that it, you know, it could be a tool to solve so many problems that we see today. So anyway, that's, it's really, really amazing. Sarah, as we start kind of winding down here, I just want to ask, like, I thought about sending you this question before our interview so you could think about it a little bit, but I was like, no, maybe I'll just put her on the spot. So the question that I ask everybody, actually, you've heard my, my first interview. So you kind of probably have a little bit of an inkling, which is, you know, what, as you know, thus far as being a parent, and I know you don't have kids of your own, but as being a teacher of many, many children for many years, what would you say has been the greatest lesson that the kids have taught you?
Okay, give me a second. Let me think about this.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Take your time.
The greatest lesson that the children have taught me, hands down, it's remembering about the joyful things in life. So they bring me so much happiness because they're so excited. They're so excited about life and they're fully present, especially those younger years. They're absorbing everything and it's the sensitivities they must have to everything coming in, all the colors, all the sounds, all the feelings of hot and cold and what have you. It's all like invigorating. And when we were talking earlier, I think we said, or I said something about the newness of things. I'm bored. And when I find something new that I'm interested in, then I find the energy coming back and I feel a little bit more alive then. And so I see this in the children. They're alive. They have so much energy. They're moving at the speed of life. And so they bring me joy and help me to remember that life is supposed to be good. Life is supposed to be fun. Life is supposed to be unpredictable, but an adventure. It's an adventure. And so that's the thing that is the biggest takeaway is that they help me to remember the basics and the kindness and the possibilities in life.
Yeah, I think as much as we give credence to all of our so-called problems and worries, it really doesn't matter to them. And they are passionately just alive and happy to be themselves. And I think while maybe the practical people out there will say, well, yeah, but they're able to do that because, you know, we're solving all the problems and doing all the worrying. And I just don't believe that to be true myself. You know, ever since sort of like even just turning off the news, you know, we think that it's important to follow all these world events and all this kind of stuff and be afraid of all these unknowns, but it's not like it doesn't matter. Once I step away from that kind of stuff, it's like, oh, all that worrying and paying attention to that kind of stuff, it really didn't matter. And I think that this actually really aligns with Montessori well, which is, you know, being the change you want to see in the world and affecting the people around you. That's how you can change the world, is affecting the people around you for the better. You know, you don't have to be the person who goes over and like somehow signs a peace treaty between Ukraine and Russia. It's about creating peace and joy and happiness and
the basic
your community flourish, you know.
I totally agree. And the part about the news, I did the same. I turned it down at some point because it was too negative for me personally. Now, what one thing that came about in 2020 for me was, why am I asking my dad what his opinion is about all this stuff? Why don't I have my own opinion? I was never interested in history or politics up until that point, you know, outside of what I needed to know for school. And in that year, I thought I should stop asking other people their thoughts and going with that. I don't even know if I agree with that. And so I started to research my own. And I developed my own opinion, and that was all I needed. But when we start to listen to like people on the news or social media or other people, just other people's words and opinions, we're taking their ideas and their beliefs, or what they're telling us their ideas and beliefs are, for face value and running with it. Why? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we exploring it a little bit more for ourselves?
Right. Exactly.
And so I may have lost my train of thought there, but I think that
it's good to
remember, if you have a little something inside you that goes a red flag, let's say, if you have something that doesn't seem so right, or I don't feel that scared about it, even though they're telling me to run and duck for cover or whatever it is.
Right.
Listen to that. Don't ignore it. Don't push it down. Be aware of that always, I think, is important. And then go kind of figure out a little bit more yourself and see. Sometimes it may align with what they're saying. And sometimes you may go, I don't think so, buddy. And then you stop listening to that. But I think it's always important to remember that little feeling we have, and sometimes it can be so subtle as an adult. That little feeling, that instinct that we have, it's there for you only, for us only. Each of our intuitions is ours, and it's to guide us, and it's got to guide us towards our well-being, and should never be something. We encourage anyone to not feel or hear for themselves.
Beautifully said. Yeah, that's a great, great place, I think, to end it. So before we stop today, Sarah, let's let people know how they can get in touch with you. Do you have an email address that you'd like to give out or something?
Yes, I would be more than happy to share my email address, and I'm more than happy to answer anyone's parenting questions. I one of my jobs at the schools that I've worked at was assistant director. I've had all the jobs in the school now, and I gave tours often to families coming in, and I would get all kind. I got a lot of answering questions about Montessori, and I would get challenging questions. But I have had so much experience with it now, and I believe in it so much now, and I'm passionate about it. And so it brings me joy to help clear up any confusion or answer any kind of challenging questions, even concerning ones like about the philosophy itself. Happy to answer any kind of questions in that sense. I think my main address includes my last name, which is very scary to spell.
Sure. I can put it in the episode description, so they'll have it if they want to. They just gotta pull the
description. Although I might give them, I started a new email. And so I mentioned, I'll do this one. It's IRB as in boy, S as in Sam, M as in Mary, Q as in quarter, 23@gmail.com.
Awesome. Yeah. So if anybody feels like reaching out to Sarah about anything, Montessori, conscious parenting, any of that kind of stuff, it's, she is so passionate about our kids and helping to raise their consciousness. And Sarah, I'm so happy that you were able to come on and we were able to have another one of these amazing conversations and to be able to share it with other people. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm so happy to have had the conversation again. Let's continue, Caleb. I'd be
happy. Absolutely.